chat. Keep it alive, through these lines I write. I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this, cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams. We pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Make sure you guys check out our website, theantimedia.org. And our friends that hooked us up with the intro music, it always gets me hyped up before the show. Ponder and XL from out of San Diego, some local friends of mine. So I'm also joined by my co-host here, DB Schwartz. How you doing, brother?
Doing good, man. I'm actually in one of these optimistic moods because over the weekend I checked out the new Captain America movie, which I thought was going to be like typical brainwashing, and it ended up being a revelation. And I'm not sure if anybody has seen this, but they say by name what Operation Paperclip is. They say by name what's going on in our own government and basically tell us what's going to happen if we don't stop it. Check it out if you haven't seen it. It's the first major big budget movie I've ever seen with balls.
Yeah, you know, I actually had a few friends talk to me about it. I haven't had a chance to check it out myself. I'm hoping to get it for free somewhere.
I mean, it's worth paying for it to support these guys that probably are not going to be on this earth too much longer. Because I'm not kidding you, man. It spells out literally the whole game plan to the T of what they're going to plan. They're not going to use these giant aircraft carriers that can float in midair because they don't have that tech yet. But they definitely have an army of drones that can stay up there perpetually and do the exact same thing.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out before I can comment on it. But yeah, a few of my friends said that it was pretty crazy and that it was like, you know, actually on some truth-telling stuff, you know, which you hardly ever see nowadays.
Well, it shows to me that the elites are getting really, really scared themselves, my friend. When the rich people are starting to understand what this apparatus is going to do to all of humanity, and they're starting to try to slide things through the cracks like this to try to warn us. I mean, it's not theory anymore. It's practical truth. It's happening to you whether or not you believe it, because Operation Paperclip is real. These people really exist. And they really probably, unless you have a special skill, want you off this earth.
Yeah, man. It's like a textbook collapse, you know, and it's like this implosion that you always see at the end whenever a civilization reaches its end cycle, you know. Exactly. And we always draw comparisons between the Roman Empire and then what's going on with this country and our empire, and the same failings that the Romans did 2,000 years ago. You know, we're unfortunately the people running this country are making the same exact mistakes.
Are they really though, or is this all part of it? Because the only way to destroy ourselves, because we're a citadel, is from within, and our enemies know this. And who's to say this isn't all part of a long game?
I mean, it's hard to say. It seems like to me that it's like a recurring structural problem, you know, that it's not that people are overly brainwashed now than they were back in the Roman days, because the Romans got away with a lot of the same stuff that the people in this time and day are getting away with now. But it's just like the failings of this whole system that we're starting to see, and the cracks are starting to show, in my opinion. And it's kind of one of these flip of the coin issues where it's going to come down one way or another. What's going to happen afterwards? I guess it's kind of a flip of the coin.
Well, they're making bets, they're making hedges, they're preparing for what they're designing to happen. They're designing the collapse itself, because from the ashes of this, they'll make their new world. And whether or not you make it, they could care less, because they're trying to make sure they make it. And it's boiling down to that, man. I mean, America served its purpose. It more or less dominated the world, and now is going to be used on a technological front to make the bridge into a new world orderly at all costs. At all costs, whatever needs to be done to keep the people pacified and controlled, that's what will take place.
Yeah, and I've been seeing there's just so much going on right now with these drones, man. That's the scariest part, obviously, because you take the human part of the equation out, and it's just a cold, calculating decision that'll be made by a computer, by a machine. And we're seeing this autonomy with these drones. I saw this documentary from what's that thing, that YouTube channel, Motherboard. I don't know if you ever heard of them, but they're kind of like an offshoot of Vice or whatever. And they had a good little 20-minute documentary on these drones, and it's just, man, these things are becoming completely autonomous.
Well, they're creating a perpetual web, too, because they're all solar panel powered now. They're basically what they call wind riders. They power this engine with solar panels on the top, and since they're over the cloud cover more or less, they never run out of juice. They can stay up there for like 10 years at a time. And they have these new next-generation projectile cannons called GOSS. I mean, they basically deliver a payload over an electrified rail system, and they go six times the speed of current firearms, so they can hit things from far up and nail it with precision. And these are the next gens, man. This is the grid that's going to come up, and they'll use all kinds of data on you. And if you don't play ball and you're disruptive and annoying, they'll just take you out, man. And whatever comes after that, they're prepped. They don't care if there's chaos. They'll make order out of whatever comes after that.
Now, while we're on these drones, man, there's some pretty terrifying info coming out from over the weekend. I'm pretty sure you saw that propaganda video that came out that was supposedly Al-Qaeda, and they were in Yemen, and there was a bunch of them flocking together. You know, this thing looked like a totally fake. It looked kind of like those Bin Laden videos from back in the day. Now, apparently, in retaliation for this video, the U.S. launched a bunch of drone strikes over the weekend, and apparently 40 people were killed in Yemen over the weekend.
Yep, it was 46 people. I mean, you know, that's just the scapegoat. It's already gone. Like, Al-Qaeda more or less is destroyed and broken, and it was always an asset that just went haywire, and now it's a million different pieces, and it's even worse for them, because now it's like throwing fire into a nest of vipers. Yeah, you're going to kill a lot of them, but then the ones that are able to get away spread and make new colonies. And it's the exact same thing happening in this case. It's an endless war. I read an article earlier today that said that we've been fighting for 15 years, more or less, because they did a couple years of prep work in the Middle East before 9/11. And we'll have another 15 years. And it is an endless war. And it's going to go for 30 years, because it's impossible to kill an idea unless you destroy a culture and an ideology, and that's the goal. For energy security for our country, we need to basically take that region over, by and large.
Now, here's the other thing that kind of flew under the radar. Apparently, a citizen from New Zealand and a citizen from Australia was caught up in some recent drone strikes in Yemen and were killed. So, we're killing these guys that are from these traditionally, Western countries and stuff. Now, the funny thing is that New Zealand's prime minister, along with Australians, whoever speaker or spokesperson or whatever, came out, and they're basically condoning this stuff. They're like, yeah,
they were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, our citizens got killed.
I mean, imagine that. Imagine if a bunch of American citizens were over there, and then we killed them with drones. and their families went on a national, you know, meet. This isn't going to fly. It's not. It's one thing when you're taking out people that you consider a terrorist in another country, but when you start hitting your own guys, I mean, these families, they can't silence them. They're going to make a big ruckus in the media. I mean, this policy is not going to be able to last much longer. You can't use Hellfires. They're going to have to go to the next gen with these new hyper cannons because they just can't be shooting missiles and just taking out 20 people to get one guy.
And if you look at the statistics, I mean, it shows that the majority of the people that get killed in these drone strikes, yeah, maybe 40 people were killed, but only 5 of them were militants.
If they're lucky.
And basically what they do is they say, okay, well, is it a male between the ages of 12 and 60? Okay, that's a militant. I don't care if he's a terrorist or not. That's still a militant. You know, it's part of the
– Yeah, they're using the predictive stuff. They're using basically the predictive algorithms that say, oh, we can base it off, you know, what all these hyper statistics. This is forecasting, and it's pre-crime, and it's things that we don't want to get into anywhere in the world, period. It boggles my mind that we're allowing this to happen. Now, they make the argument that we have to hit them before they can even come over here because they'll unleash some horrible weapon of mass destruction or a dirty bomb or something of that nature, and millions will die. And this is the policy is to take it to them and take it to them in the extreme manner. But the thing is, like, what's the end game for that? Because are we gonna just continually be over there killing people so they can't come over here? I mean, you're making more and more and more people mad at you.
Yeah, and then they explain it away using this Alinsky-inspired dehumanization propaganda where they call them terrorists, they call them militants, even though they could be 13-year-old boys.
We just don't know.
And it's just like what they did with these Boston bomber kids where they immediately called them terrorists. They immediately said that it's weapons of mass destruction and all this stuff. And now we're seeing it take shape again now here in Ukraine where before they were calling these guys in eastern Ukraine pro-Russian protesters, and now they're pro-Russian militants. So now when they get killed by the Western-backed government of Ukraine, now they're militants. They're terrorists. They're not people. They're dehumanized. They might as well be animals.
Yeah, it was all across the AP wires that these instigators have been already ID'd as Russian military. How? Where and what? And where's the proof? I mean, this is theater. The thing is that the news nowadays, it's so obviously just completely fabricated on all sorts of fronts that we can't tell. We don't know. We don't know what's fact and what's not. We're not on the ground, and we can't trust these guys anymore with all this CGI crap they can pull and these green screen things. And they've already been shown they have no credibility anyway. So what's really going on? It's a proxy war. Just don't believe it's anything of a revolution or a civil war or any of that. It's just two superpowers squaring off. That's all it is. Ukraine just is in the middle. That's it.
And yeah, and then the poor people in the middle that are disgruntled with the government on either side, they're just cogs in the wheel. They're just going to become, you know, they're either going to be slaves of the central bank or they're going to be energy slaves of Russia. That's it.
Right. It's where's their cultural heritage? Where do they feel that they want to be a part of? The thing is, they want to have Ukraine be Ukraine. They want to have a mesh in between these things. They're a border country. They're in between two civilizations. They want to be unique. But naturally, with the way things are now, you can't. You have to be a puppet of one or the other unless you're powerful enough yourself. And they're just not. And well, it's really unfortunate. It's just a sign of the times, you know, when you have these three super powerful countries that can literally do whatever they want to whoever else.
You know, the sad part is that Ukraine actually, when the Soviet Union broke up, they were actually in position to become a pretty decent, you know, at least independent when it comes to defense.
Right.
But what happened is we talked them into giving up all their arms. We talked them into giving up their nuclear arsenal. And we said, hey, we'll protect you guys. And then what do we do? Carve it up with Russia.
Well, we will protect them. But what can we do? Are we going to start? This is where autonomy and self-determination become very important for people. If they want a culture and a country and borders and something to call their own so they can make decisions and they don't become part of this massive collective like the people in charge of these three super states would love to have happen so they can have this one world hegemony. We don't want those things because we're different. We still are. We're still tribes. We're not at the point where humanity can all live and coexist together. I wish we could, but it's apparent we can't. It can't be forced. It has to come organically over generational times and people getting over these stigmas and these stupid things we cling to. But it can't be forced. If it's to be forced, it's going to be a violent World War III type scenario again, just like World War II, and they tried to force it on people, tried to enslave everyone under one autocratic rule, and we're not ready for it. It has to come naturally. People need to want to do this. It can't be forced on them or else they'll resist.
Exactly, man. The revolution must be intellectual, must be peaceful. You know,
it's going to happen. The people are worried about resources running out at the top. And the thing is that we're cool. If tomorrow my car doesn't run, we'll have genetically engineered horses. We'll come up with things to get around whatever shortages there are of things we really don't need. We just need farms and transportation and people to talk with and hang out with, and we're good.
Exactly. And we're brainwashed into this whole system that we need all this and we need all that. And I mean, it's just disgusting the amount of trash that people go through, that Americans go through. I mean, and just the plastic and the fucking shiny stuff and the packaging and the plastic bags and all this stuff. It's just like, dude, this stuff is sickening. You see this stuff like thrown in these dumps, in these landfills. It's just, it's gross. It's disgusting.
This Earth Day needs to be one of action from a level that we haven't had happen before, because the people that control stuff will use the environment to do their power grab. They're going to use global warming and carbon taxes and all these other little things they're going to use. And the thing is, to offset that, we need to go back to agrarian culture, a green culture. We'll get the grid to go Tesla. We'll force all these things to happen. But these things need to happen through information and education. So these guys at the top now aren't going to be able to clamp down with some crazy ass police state military coup grab and make this into some horrible dystopian future like we've seen in so many different novels.
Exactly, man. We can't fall for this mistake of oh, now we want to do a solar takeover of the economy and it's led by the government. Well, then you're going to have the same autocrats running the solar electricity grid that you have running the current electricity grid. So I mean, it's imperative that we go about this thing in a decentralized way. Yeah, in certain ways, it may be a bit more expensive and a bit more inconvenient, but at the same time, you don't have to answer to anybody. You got your own. If you got your own community solar power set up that you share with your community, you don't got to answer to anybody but your own neighbors. I mean, you're not answering to some bureaucrat somewhere on the other side of the world, which is, you know, that's where we derive our freedom. As long as people can control us one way or another, you know, we're never going to have true freedom, because at any moment our freedom and our what we've become used to can get yanked out right from under us, and we won't even know what to do. And then everyone goes into a panic mode, and people become part of these herds, and they rush, you know, and it turns into a mess. So the more that we could get self-reliant at the very least from the community level, I mean, the better off we'll be in the long run and the more freedom we'll have. Make sure you guys, if anybody wants to call in, we have open lines tonight. So make sure you guys call in at 718-717-8296, and we'll have lines open all night if you guys want to call in, talk about whatever you want to talk about. Now, there's another story that came up. And I wanted to jump into this because it all, I guess, ties all into this same thing. This is from ZeroHedge.com. In the beginnings, it was banker suicides. Then about 2 weeks ago, suicides were replaced by outright murders after the execution-style killing of the CEO of the bank in otherwise sleepy Liechtenstein by a disgruntled client. Now, we went over that a few weeks ago. Then on Friday, news hit of another execution-type murder in just as sleepy, if not so tax evasive, Belgium, where in the city of Weiss, a 37-year-old director at BNP Paribas Fortis Bank was murdered alongside his wife and 9-year-old nephew in a premeditated and orchestrated drive-by shooting.
And this is a disgruntled client, so we can assume that because a driveway went through, is an underworld character or something that lost their money due to investments or divestment or a collapse of the currency they're using or whatever. Imagine more of this stuff happening, because what we're seeing now is a consolidation of wealth from everyone to the top. And even the people that are rich, if they have ill-begotten gains, like these organized crime guys that have their money in the banks, they're going to get squeezed and bled out too. And then guess what? They're going to take it out on the bankers because they're the middlemen.
Hey, we have, I think we have Alberto on the line. You want to chime in on this?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
How's it going?
Pretty much it's been a little so-so here and there, but pretty much, have you checked out currently what's the number one trending topic on Twitter right now?
No, what is it?
Right now, since Mexico's Enrique Peña Nieto has gotten sick and tired of being trolled on Twitter, about last week he has been trying to come up with a new law initiative to pretty much do internet censorship in Mexico, plus also help the Televisa on the side pretty much increase their TV monopoly. And
wow.
The people on the internet pretty much riled up the prince that, well, they pretty much carved the country out piece by piece, and with the fifth estate on the line now, pretty much, in other words, pretty much the peeps have gotten sick and tired pretty much. If it wasn't enough for oil to be privatized, pretty much with the internet gone, pretty much that would be pretty much it. Pretty much also López Obrador can pretty much start saying goodbye to the presidency in 2018. Pretty much, in our words, I guess you know what I mean.
Well, it seems like, you know, if they're trying to censor the internet out in Mexico, it's probably because there's a big popular movement rising down there. You know,
there is.
I think the people in Mexico, I mean, we see it with these militias that have popped up. Yeah, these self-defense militias that have popped up. I think the people are tired. They're, you know, it's like they know that the government's corrupt. They know that the cartels are working with the government. They're tired of it, and the people are – you know, they're not afraid to speak up anymore because it's become to the point where there's a majority of them that are tired of it. So they're not afraid to speak their minds anymore. So if they're trolling the president on Twitter to the point where he's trying to censor Twitter, I mean, that tells you the people are ready to burst down there, man, just like they are in almost, you know, every country, it seems right now.
Almost everywhere. And the thing is, it's just great to see it there because it'll, you know what, Nick, if that something happens down there, we're here, right? We're there already. It's going to pass over to here. And people are going to scratch their heads and go, what the hell am I seeing over the border right now?
Well, definitely. Pretty much if it isn't enough. I don't know how come it isn't pretty much the – well, I guess that's pretty much the – I guess if you could say the straw that broke the camel's back with – if it isn't enough out of the almost 100 million that 60 of them – are poor and about 20 of them in severe dire poverty that they live pretty much live on $1 a week that pretty much that the drug cartels are pretty much have almost taken over the country and become almost a de facto power per se pretty much with the last straw of liberty on the line pretty much it's an hour and ever.
And you gotta think about how long Mexico has been exploited by these imperialist interests. I mean, we all know that Spain robbed them blind of all their assets, all their gold, silver, and all that stuff. They just stole that. They murdered people for that. And then now look what's going on in Mexico. One of the biggest driving factors behind inequality and violence in Mexico is U.S. policy. It's U.S. law. It's the drug war. We're largely to blame for what's going on in Mexico for all these deaths. I mean, the city of Ciudad Juarez is more violent than Baghdad, and our taxes are paying for that. Are paying for these policies that are causing these things to happen. We've got blood on our hands.
And 5 meters away is El Paso, which is an absolute fortress.
Pretty much, I guess it started in 1992, and pretty much it was, well, with the muertas de Juarez, the French, well, it was at least first the women. Pretty much, they tried to sweep it under the rug, but it became to the point that pretty much that all hell broke loose. Pretty much, everybody just run for your lives. Although that's another story, but pretty much, I'd like to get back to pretty much the main focus point here. That deal is we would need to not just find a way to get, we need to find one way or another to get not just off the grid pretty much electricity-wise, but pretty much if it comes down to the point that we need to find alternative ways to pretty much use the internet without the AT&T's or Comcast, or in the case of Mexico, which pretty much Telcel and Carlos Slim have pretty much kind of control of the internet monopoly, that pretty much we gotta find out and fast alternative ways to pretty much not just to get off the electricity grid, but pretty much find alternative ways to get on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. And you got to remember this guy Carlos Slim. I'm sure everyone listening knows his story. He's last time we checked, he was the richest man in the world as of last year.
That's only on paper, though, Nick.
On paper, yeah. So
there's we know all about trust funds that have $500 trillion in north in them.
Exactly, but these guys down in Mexico, they have these kind of mob boss mentalities, even the CEOs and stuff, and a lot of them work directly with these cartels to provide security and things like that, which is unfortunate. And once again, it's American policy backfiring.
It's our own
political arrogance, it seems, and us thinking what's best for everybody else that ends up harming everybody and causing all these problems, it seems.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I guess it also when the Tratado de Libre Comercio, the pretty much the free trade agreement, which was approved in the late 90s, pretty much it was also something that pretty much helped out in the crisis. Even though for the sake of things that we have our Walmart, Costco's, McDonald's in Mexico, small businesses pretty much have been pretty much and slowly been diminished, and with banks being privatized, and which apparently with the derivatives going being inflated to the point of collapse. Well, pretty much it's pretty much that for no reason the dreamers are trying to pretty much one way or another trying to get into the Fed, because the future's canceled down there. There's nothing available.
And if we think we have it bad here, man, I mean, Mexico's got it off a bit worse than we do.
We don't have it bad here at all. I mean, they have the full-blown police state down there. I mean, Nick, you even told me when you were down there, there's checkpoints randomly and there's gunfire every once in a while. It's what it is when you let it happen that the government takes over. They go into collusion with organized crime since they are that themselves.
And it's
not hard to see that our own government works with the cartels. They've been caught doing it by our own government has caught our government working with the cartels. But because the government polices the government, there's nothing they can do to themselves. And the people are so whatever, blind to it, or don't care about it, or don't even know about it, and nothing happens.
It's basically like that movie, what's it called, Traffic, I think, where it talks about the cartels and stuff. I mean, it's funny, that movie, just like the movie you were talking about at the beginning, the Captain America, I mean, that's exactly what happens. It's like one cartel works with the government, and they work against the other cartel works with the Mexican government, you know, vice versa, and once again, just like in Ukraine, when we have these proxy wars going on, who ends up suffering? The average person in Mexico. And so, you know, the thing in Mexico is that guns are already banned. Guns are banned. You can't own a gun in Mexico unless you've served time in the military. If you serve time in the military, then you can own a gun. So that's why they're able to get away with all these massively oppressive practices and blatant corruption that's just right in front of your face.
Let me just correct you one thing, Nick. You can own a gun, but you will need a permit from the government to permit it. To pretty much be able to hold on without actually being arrested. I kind of learned that when Paco Stanley, my favorite comedian, was assassinated in 1999, that he had a gun permit, but he couldn't defend himself because he forgot to carry a gun that day.
Yeah. So now what you're seeing now is as these militiamen start rising up in arms, you're seeing that the government can't really put them down because they're going to risk a full-on, you know, hand-to-hand combat.
Oh, yeah. In the case of in Michoacán, pretty much since the local government was unwilling to do anything alone because they were legit connected with the cartels and the army barely doing anything. They pretty much, well, they had no choice. They had to bear arms. That to the point that when the Mexican government tried to repress the movimientos of autodefensa, the self-defense movements of Michoacán, that pretty much they were unsuccessful. That pretty much they sort of cut a deal. That pretty much when the Templarios were pretty much gone, then they would pretty much unarmed per se.
Yeah, so they just wanted the drug cartels out of there, and then they would put their arms down, right?
Yeah.
So, in a way, this is kind of resemblant of what went on here with this whole Bundy rant situation, which is being completely demonized in the media. We got Harry Reid calling these people domestic terrorists now, it seems, and it's kind of the same thing. I mean, it's good to see people willing to stand up in arms, even though they didn't have to resort to violence, they didn't have to fire any shots. It's just people getting to the point now where they're saying, look, we're tired of being pushed around. We're ready to stand up and say that we're not going to take it anymore. And it seems like we're getting closer and closer to that point, not only in this country, not only in Mexico, but almost everywhere, it seems.
Well, it's pretty much if the government can't pretty much do what it's supposed to do, that pretty much, well, the people have to do it one way or another. Although the pretty much the self-defense situation is pretty much it's only in the southern portion of Mexico and mostly in Michoacán because of the obvious violence. But if something doesn't happen to pretty much stop the bleeding, obviously it will continue to go. It will continue to spread.
And I mean, we can stop it we could stop it here pretty quickly if we just had some people that put in some logical drug policy.
I mean, we could even go so far as to, if we were a consciously and politically aware country, exert pressure on our own government to become involved and to take out the cartels publicly. Because obviously Mexico is going to become a failed state soon, and maybe they'll even be pressured to annex it in some way because it can't govern itself anymore.
Well, in appearance, it wouldn't be able to govern itself, but it's because, well, like almost 2 years ago when Peña Nieto supposedly won the presidency, he only won the presidency thanks to the help of the Televisa and Azteca, the main media, barely destroying the news. Do you guys know how the Yo Soy 132 movement got started in Mexico?
No, I'm not too familiar with it.
Oh, yeah. The Yo Soy 132 move started when then candidate Peña Nieto visited a university in Mexico City that pretty much he was received warmly, but with a lot of skepticism. He was questioned about certain events, although the straw that broke the camel's back, which was when he was asked about repression in a town called Atenco, where he wanted to build a new international airport. And he blurred out honest that he would do it again, and then it all got riled up. It kind of got to the point that pretty much he had to hit into one of the local restrooms. And when the news came out, that pretty much they said that the visit was just a peaceful, a nice visit. It was just questions here and then, nothing of the sort happened. If it weren't for Facebook and Twitter, and when it later got on word about the word of what really happened in the visit, then they said, well, members of the opposition party came to troll the candidate Peña Nieto. When then afterward, 101 students of the university showed their ID and said, "I am so and so," and I went there to question Peña Nieto about this and that. And then from then onward, that's where the Yo Soy 132 movement was born. Well, pretty much to demand that truth and clarity from the press.
Well, it's kind of like a natural reaction, you know, and it's what we're seeing now. It's like just a reaction to what's going on. There's less and less freedom. More and more people are going to stand up. You know, and the more that we're oppressed, the more people are going to speak out. And, you know, if what's going to happen as things start to fall apart, just like we're seeing now with this Twitter censorship in a few countries, Turkey, now in Mexico, as people speak out, the more they try to clamp down, and the more people speak out, the more they try to get around it. Like the point you were making, kind of when you first called in, the need for us to try to move around this corporate controlled internet system. And because what happens is, since the corporations work so closely with the government, they're able to go and just shut down Twitter access for a whole country, or shut down Facebook, or shut down some messaging, Skype, or whatever it is that they're using, or the internet in general. They could shut down the whole internet like they've done in Syria multiple times. And that's really scary, because then there's a blackout. You don't know what the hell's going on.
Well, you do know one thing that's going on, which is that the shit's about to hit the fan if the internet goes out.
Well, definitely. And well, to me, since you guys mentioned previously that pretty much if it happens down in Mexico, then it will be pretty much a mirror effect. If it goes down in Mexico, it will only be a matter of time that pretty much it will happen here in the U.S. with although they'll need to find some sort of a excuse to do so.
Exactly, man. Hey, Alberto, thanks for calling in, man, and call back in on next Monday if you want to talk some more. We're going to move on into a little bit of news here and get through the rest of this thing. I'll talk to you later.
All right, no problem. Oh, yeah, just to mention that the university was the Ibero-American, La Universidad Iberoamericana in Mexico, so just to clarify that point, that was pretty much a little add-on of information for today. And thank you very much for having me.
Hey, what's your Twitter handle?
You can find me once again. I'm pretty much tweeting out the info right now through my personal Twitter at 314 Love Machine. Nothing triple X. You just like to do random rants, so show interaction and plug a few things here and there, like your show, which I like your deep viewpoints.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for calling in.
Take it easy.
Yeah, he tweets our stuff on Twitter all the time. If you guys
so what he's talking about down there is it's more or less the cartels or the organized crime has won over the government, which is a rarity, but it does happen, and they become the government in a sense. They infiltrate it and buy it out, and then it becomes a failed state, and that's when other countries, generally bigger actors or bigger powers, become involved because they sense an instability. We can't have a neighbor to the south that would be like that. And you can be sure that at some point we'll feel an urge to become involved there when we bring home the guys from over in oil land. But, yeah, man, what's going on there is spreading. You know, I thought we'd see it soon. I just didn't think it happened so soon, but now these things are starting to go on in China. And the people there are tired of the police, and there's so many of them that they had better appease them.
And now the other thing that Alberto was mentioning about NAFTA and how basically NAFTA opened it up. Now when you go to Mexico, there's Walmarts everywhere, man. And and the small businesses are taking a huge hit. So that tells me that if we're not really careful, I mean, the people down there can start to get some really, really strong anti-American sentiment as well. And I wouldn't doubt a lot of them already have it. But I mean, seriously, man, it's also a powder keg, just like Ukraine down in Mexico, man. At any time, something can pop off down there, and it could definitely spill over and cause some issues. And if America was smart, we wouldn't be over and trying to meddle in Ukraine. We'd be trying to help our neighbors to the south by decriminalizing drugs and trying to help solve those problems. But we're not. You know, instead we're out meddling in the Far East and trying to start up a new proxy war. It's insane.
People just need to understand that this is either making new gravy trains or protecting the ones we already have. That's all it is. It's just pulling it's like they always say that Goldman Sachs is the vampire squid of the world because it dictates our foreign policy in such a way that we feel obligated to use our overwhelming military might to go grab resources for Fortune 500 companies. And it's just that simple. And that's all we do is we go grab more material goods for access for more gravy trains. That's all it is. That's everything. That's why this empire can't work, because there's just too many things coming in and nothing going out. And the world, they're not going to stand for it anymore. You can't export poverty and expect it to go on endlessly.
Not even if you call it democracy.
It's and not even if you have the drone army that will cover the world skies. People are it's like they say that when you're a slave, it's not a life, man. And once you've tasted, if you were born into a freedom you thought you had and they try to take that, how can you sit by and let that happen? I mean, unless you're completely clueless. And then the best thing about it is we have a chance through our own intellect to hopefully change the minds of the guys at the top, because otherwise it's going to get bad and we don't want it to happen that way.
And now here's the one thing that people always forget. Humans are like germs, man. We're highly, highly adaptable. And,
sure.
When just like any time anyone tries to oppress you, eventually you find a way out of it. Just like the Jews that were able to survive in Germany throughout the whole Nazi thing by hiding out in the gutters and pulling off, you know, guerrilla warfare and stuff like that. I mean, it's just a way of life for human beings. We're going to adapt. If we get put in the situation, it's only a matter of time before we start to overcome it.
And why are we allowing these cycles to perpetuate is what I want to know. All of the people who are learned, who have actually taken the time to go educate themselves using this glorious internet and going and looking at these sources, and a lot of them are dubious, but a lot of them are real. And you start to picture this new world, the one that they're not telling you about, the real one. How in your right mind can you continue to buy into this paradigm, this complete matrix they've created for all these sheeps? And the thing is to wake them up. You have to be a shepherd. So I guess this is what we always talk about, is continuing to spread the word, because eventually enough people wake up and it's too late for them to do much. But it's the ongoing fight. It's the mind war that's going on now, because if we can get our culture to change, it will spread to the top and it will hopefully reverse all the awful harm we're doing right now in a quest for a dying way of life we need to change it. I'm sorry, we can't drive gas guzzlers anymore. We're killing the world. We're killing everybody in it doing it. And we just got to suck it up and go back to a different way. It's not going to suck. It's going to be all right. Trust me.
I mean, if the government's going to use oil to trample all these countries, then we're going to have to stop using oil.
I mean, what's the real benefit? I love my car. I do. And I love filling it up or whatever, and the power. But I'd be okay if I had to. I'll use a damn horse. I know it sounds funny to everybody, but they don't take gas. You just feed them grass.
You said you wanted a genetically modified horse earlier.
Yeah, I want a GMO horse that runs 50 miles an hour and doesn't get tired.
Hey, we have another caller on the line here. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio.
Hey guys, it's LaVon. I was enjoying your show. I've got the perfect metaphor for what's going on right now. Have you guys heard me talk about imaginal cells before? Well, people right now, the ones that are kind of aware, we are imaginal cells, just like a butterfly going through metamorphosis. So these imaginal cells, right, they're what's to become, and they start resonating at a different frequency. And they're totally different from the caterpillar's immune system. So the immune system starts to eat them. Because it thinks they're enemies, you know, but they just continue relentlessly to appear. And pretty soon they all gather. And when they realize that they are this one thing and they start sharing information, something clicks. And then that's when the transformation happens. So don't give up. That's what I got.
That's awesome.
Well, we create reality through perception. It's been well known that it's similar to the 100th monkey effect, and also similar to yelling, I hate you and I love you at water with different vibrational frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
That we live
exactly.
This is a quantum reality. You have to understand that this is an illusion you can change through your own thoughts. Now, actions work better. Trust me, they work 100 times better than thinking something. But if enough people think it, it does happen.
Exactly. Once a boiling point is reached when it comes to consciousness, it'll turn into action spontaneously, probably.
We're
going to see a lot of the same ideas just popping up around the planet. And I just think, you know, it's going to be like overnight, you know, it's just going to be like boom. And we're going to go, what?
What? We're having like the first carbon neutral energy zero sum houses coming out, meaning that they don't have to be plugged into grid. You could just buy land in the middle of nowhere. They'll come build it for you, and you're off grid. Those are available right now.
Bam. Let's do it.
Store-bought. They're not cheap. But, I mean, you can buy land in the middle of nowhere for like $5,000 and plop this $250,000 self-contained unit down and then have fun with your $5 a year tax or whatever.
That's just one of the ideas, though. You know, people are creating so many different methods of cheap, eco-friendly, off-the-grid living. You know, you see them everywhere online now, and it's a beautiful thing. So I just want to have everybody have a good night. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Awesome. Thanks for calling in.
Luck.
Make sure you guys tune in to LaVon's show on Fridays at the same time. She's our third show of the week on the Anti-Media Radio here on UCY. Make sure you bookmark it. You can catch us Wednesday night, same time, 8 Pacific, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Love your guys' show. You keep me in the loop. I appreciate it.
We try.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
You do a good job. Bye, guys.
Bye.
And LaVon's helping us here in San Diego with the March Against Monsanto organizing and stuff, which is cool. And my buddy, I actually just talked to my buddy today. He's gonna set up. We're having these workshops, and he's gonna set up a vertical gardening workshop in an easy way to build a vertical hydroponic garden. So I mean, if you're living in an apartment or a condo and you just have like a balcony, you know, this is perfect. You can get like three vertical little towers, and it's like having a 10 by 10 plot of dirt almost.
And you know, Nick, I've been looking into some of the things going on with where people are buying old plants in the Midwest and turning those into gigantic organic factories, basically hydroponic farms and indoors, and they have the infrastructure set up. Those can be had for $8,000 to $10,000, but you can buy them and own them. And they're massive, and they're old, just beat up. But so what? They have power available. They're on the grid.
There's probably tons of really dirt cheap property in Detroit, man.
Oh well, you know where I've been looking is all through the Midwest, and of course in Detroit, some of those are like $2,500. But the area's sketch, so you don't want to live in like the complete worst part of town, because then, well, you know, who's gonna go come buy your crops? You got to make sure it's in a place where it's kind of like, you know, not the best, because it's kind of like the Rust Belt in a way. But like, there's places like Pittsburgh that are innovative, and they're coming back. Detroit actually is kind of regrowing.
Yeah, man, I've seen a lot of innovative stuff come out of Detroit.
Yeah, because you can get cheap land. Like me and you could go out and buy a warehouse and start an organic hydroponic farm like tomorrow, and have probably people work there for free as long as they can crash there while they're building it up, and it's golden. It's done. In like 6 months, it'll be fully done.
You see, when you lower the barrier of entry, man, when you make it so it's not so expensive to go in there and get actually start up an indoor organic aquaponic farm inside of a warehouse in Detroit.
Yep.
The property is actually priced at a fair value. Then it's actually feasible.
And you know what's funny about Detroit? They have two things that you would never think about. They have a lot of water, since, of course, they're on a great lake. And then they have a lot of power because of all the water, because they have a lot of hydropower. And a lot of it comes right across the border from Canada, and it's fairly inexpensive. It would be a cheap place to start these things up. And people want organic produce in the dead of winter, and there you go. Bam, it's done.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, the other thing is that, like, let's look at who owns most of the property in this country. It's either the government or the banks.
Or the Chinese.
And now it's starting to become the Chinese, you know. So it's, you know, a lot of the property in this country is not owned by the average everyday citizens. It's owned by trusts. It's owned by the banks. And then, you know, 600, 700, 800 million acres are owned by the government.
Right.
You know, there's no exact tally, but it's at least 650, 700 million acres. And that's a huge chunk. I mean, like
– is that including Alaska?
Yeah, they own most of Alaska.
Yeah, they own almost all of it. And honestly, even though it's like a frozen tundra, with the way the climate's about to change, that might become farmland soon.
Yeah, Alaska, you know, I mean, you can do greenhouse on the in the bright side of the when it's summertime, man, you could have a full growing season, cuz it never gets dark. And then during the winter, you could have indoor. You know,
well, that's what they do in Anchorage. House. They have greenhouses supplying all their produce, and it's ready to go. If it just gets a little warmer and thaws out more of the year. It's actually a big tundra, and you can grow all kinds of stuff on it. You know, they always say the pole's going to shift, like go north to south, and then it'll flip a certain amount of degrees, and it's going to end up, you know, somewhere, they always say in Wisconsin or some area like that. That will actually make Alaska, like, more temperate, more like Seattle-ish.
Yep, exactly.
So weird. Maybe it's a good time to buy Alaskan land. I don't know.
Now, while we're on this, man, I wrote this article last week, and it's about how the food prices are, like, skyrocketing right now. And lettuce prices are supposed to be up, like, 25%. Corn is up, like, 12%. I mean, and this stuff's all being blamed on this drought going on in California. And in this article, I kind of made a point where, yeah, well, a way to hedge against all this stuff is to grow a garden. We talk about that all the time. But now I was looking at these charts and I was doing some research for this article, man, and it's like the food prices and the gas prices are actually, like, when you look at how they rise and fall, it's like identical. And it's like all the commodities rise and fall this way. And then if you look at it closely, you can see that it's basically from the Fed. I mean, it's the inflation from the Fed causing the fluctuation of the food and the gas. And that's why our gas prices are never going to be a dollar again, because we bailed out the banks and created $16 trillion, and then we continued to bail them out every month after that. So our dollar doesn't have the value where we can get a gallon of gas for a dollar anymore.
Unless we went to hemp fuel, which we could grow everywhere.
Yeah, and unless we got out of this fossil fuel monopoly. Fortunately, a lot of people are brainwashed to believe in this thing, you know, but let's face it, the fossil fuel industry gets massive amounts of subsidies and they've become quasi-government. They're in many ways, the big oil is part of the government now. I mean, they're heavily rooted in the Republican Party, let's face it. So, you know, it's not so much that it's like this drought in California and then they said the gas prices were going up because there was a problem at a refinery. It's like, are you serious that we had a 50-cent jump in gas because there was a problem at a refinery? It just doesn't make any sense.
It does make sense. It's just a lie. The thing is, there's never going to be a – there's so much overbuilt infrastructure, so many different ways of getting oil that there's no real loss in production or anything like that. It's just all a problem of – the derivatives, basically, the bets on it and the hedges on it, and that's how the market flows. And sometimes when oil becomes too cheap, it sits inside giant tankers right off the coast. And if they were to deliver, it would drive the prices down too much. It's stupid crap like that. And it's all just part of a huge problem with everything about our whole economy worldwide. We can hearken it even into how things never filter down to the public because – the patents are worth too much damn money for these miracle cures for everything from cancer to AIDS to even infertility not being pushed down because the people that own them are holding out for more money. And it's just corruption on an unbelievable level, like you couldn't even imagine at the very top. People don't understand their lives are being played with because they're pawns.
Hey, we have another caller from 916. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio.
Oh, hey, what's up, man? It's Cassius.
Hey, what's up, bro? How you doing?
I'm doing all right now. About to write another article for the Anti-Media.
Awesome. Yeah, Cassius is one of our awesome journalists on the Anti-Media Radio. Helps us put out some of these independent articles and some, you know, hard-hitting truth, you know, stuff. Yep, what's going on, man? What are you up to? What do you want to talk about?
Not much. Well, something that interests me today was that thing about China, that revolt or whatever, when like a cop killed someone or something.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
I mean, honestly, this is just a start because it spreads because they're all culturally identified with each other. They're the Han. And when they get mad and there's so many people. And when you hurt one person, it's like 500 people. Get mad at you.
Yeah, man.
And they killed how many people did they kill? Like three guys? So they killed all the cops and they torched the police station.
Hell yeah. Well, it seems like the internet ban there isn't doing much good.
No.
In favor of them. It's not going to stop shit.
No, there's too many people there. They're smart. They want to be free. They're just looking for a reason to – they, unlike us where our government looks to make an excuse to do something, they're the people are waiting for their government to fuck up.
Yeah, like the U.S. government has a long history of uniquely justifying the things they do in like some kind of culture that a lot of people accept because they haven't had to struggle that much. The people that accept it in America haven't exactly, you know, had that much struggle, some of them. So there, I assume, with all the rest of the, you know, fucked up things they deal with, they probably have more of a reason to actually, you know, do something drastic. They probably have less to lose. Maybe they realize that if they don't do something, it's just going to get worse.
I think it kind of is part of this whole global boiling point that I think is coming to a head. And we had a caller on a few minutes ago, Alberto. He's from down here, just south of where I'm at. He literally lives about two miles from the border, and he does a lot of activism down in Tijuana and stuff. But I mean, they're getting ready to censor Twitter down in Mexico, man, because the people are just getting to this boiling point. And I know you heard about those autonomous self-defense militias that are springing up in Mexico. Yeah. So
there was
I mean,
an article about that for Activist Post. Yeah, man, it's Mexico is. I think that drug war hardened them a lot. They're just like, you know, they're not taking the corruption from the cartels or the government now. And it seems like there's a set of factors that are really motivating them to, you know, get to that point. And I do like to look at things on like a global perspective and the underlying things behind all the stories we see. So are there any like points that you might want to bring up that I haven't thought of about like the underlying thing that's transforming the world?
Well, you know, in my opinion, and this is kind of what happened, I know, with Mexico, is that in this last election, the people basically felt like their votes weren't counted. And I think that's kind of the attitude going on all around the world. Everyone's tired of government, and then at the same time, they feel like their votes aren't being counted or that their votes don't matter. And in a yeah. big way, even in America, the land of the free, I mean, look how much election fraud and stuff like that we saw happen in 2012 with Ron Paul. They did a lot of this stuff, and Ron Paul actually won Iowa, and then it was claimed that Romney won Iowa, and then it was claimed that what's-his-name won Iowa, and then
Princeton Review just released an article that stated by their research that America is officially an oligarchy. And was any peep made about it? No. I mean, do people know what oligarchy means who watch American Idol? Like, you know
not.
What I mean? People probably don't even know what that term means. It means you are a serf.
Yeah. Damn, I wish I could think of more ways to reach out to audiences that haven't yet discovered the independent media. You know, reach out to people that just haven't circumstantially had a reason to wake up yet. I have, like, an interest in, you know, finding really creative and new ways to wake people up. I'm thinking about putting some anti-media flyers around or some shit.
Well, I think you're partially onto it, man, with the music, because I think the music, because Cassius also has a few music projects that he's working on. You can plug those in a second here, but music is a great way, I think, to cross boundaries and kind of get people get the message across to people that normally wouldn't be seeking out this message, but then when they hear it, they're like, hey, actually, that's truth. You know, that makes sense, and that's kind of like what happened with Bob Marley, man. People started hearing these songs. I mean, reggae wasn't that huge before Bob Marley, and then people started hearing these songs, and they were like, damn, I identify with that. That is how things are. Why are things that messed up? You know, I think that's a great way of doing it is through music.
Yeah, definitely, man. There's not very many lyrics in a lot of my music, but if someone, for example, just clicks on my music and discovers what it is or who I am, they discover my articles too. So it does definitely get more people into it, and that's actually how I got into activism. I was into like punk rock and metal and stuff, and for some reason one of Adam Kokesh's videos was like recommended on YouTube, and that's actually how I stumbled upon this movement.
Alright man, we're coming to the end here. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for tuning in to the Anti-Media Radio. We'll catch you guys on Wednesday.
Yep, sir, man. Peace.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.